Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Indeed, this is live. This is the Horn, HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. It is the 19th day of May, 2014. We are live on Capitol Hill at the headquarters of the 8th Campaign, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Campaign. Thank you very much, Sparky, getting the thumbs up, sounding good, Bob. Thank you very, very much, Sparky. It's always such a lovely novelty when this stuff actually works. Only one thing not working right now. I clicked on Update Java and then forgot, oops, something will probably booger up from this. And, I'm having a hard time getting into the chat room. My apologies. H-O-R-N, Bob Kincaid Horn, on Skype. So no chat room for me yet. We'll probably work that out after the program. I thought I had everything licked, but you always forget something. No, it is, we're live. It is Moran Monday on the Horn, and we have oodles o' Morans. I mean, tons from whom to choose. I mean, wow. I guess, it's that season. Several states have already had their primaries. There are several more that are coming in short order. I think Virginia's is in a couple of weeks. Tennessee's still way out in August. Ah, thank you very kindly, Robert. Loud and clear in Oz, Robert says. That's good to hear. But it's bringing out what can only be thought of as the stupid. And, I mean, stupid and plenty of it. Holy mackerel. You know, when you do this kind of thing long enough, after a while you feel like, yeah, well, I've seen it all. And I've been following politics in one form or another. God, I was raised following politics. It was a household endeavor kind of thing. But my God, but you got to check this guy out. There is an absolute, what's the taxonomic term for a whole bunch of teabaggers? Well, whatever it is, this guy's one of them. Brian Slowinski. is running for representing Paul Brown's seat in Congress from Georgistan. I give you like 15 seconds before you start begging me to turn it off. But I had to listen to it. You listen to it too. It feels like it's been playing for hours, doesn't it? That's only a minute and 8 seconds of a 3 minute campaign song. And the stupid "It Hurts" is us. Holy mackerel. He's going to throw the bums out of D.C. You can go to WashingtonMonthly.com and see the video if you have. By the way, the video is 64 weeks, 30K mile, no money, and lots of hard work, too. Ouch. Just, oh, my God. You might find it more easily via the Esquire.com politics blog, the joint run by Charlie Pierce. Nobody is okay after seeing this video. It's just unbearable. And there's more. There are more ends plenty for this more in Monday. By the way, I would be remiss if I did not mention that, of course, this program happens as a result of the determination of the Horn Family Commune that it continue to happen. And I guess I was a little late to the game, but I added everything up. And we finished the first half of May about $300 in a hole. And we find ourselves at the beginning of the program here, including what we need to raise for any given day, $150. So we're at a $450 hole. Dr. John has kindly offered to double your money for the first $50 that come in. Two folks, Mike and James, took care of 20 of that. There remains $30 of Dr. John's $50 challenge to be answered. So $30 more can be doubled to $60 as soon as, and I'll let you know as soon as the challenge has been met. And that'll take us from $450 down to $350, which is a big deal. So, you know, the PayPal button's at headonradionetwork.com. So, too, is the traditional mail address, that being the Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. Remember, checks, money orders, things like that should not be made payable to Bob Kincaid, but instead to Head On Communications or the Horn, because Boss Man Wayne takes care of all of that. So thank you very kindly, one and all. If we could clear out, Lord, if we could clear out that that deficit, it would make life considerably easier, because I have to do a lot of remote bill paying while I'm up here. Asa, yeah, I get it. Asa said, honestly, Bob, I thought that music you were playing was the intro to a comedy skit. No, and that's what makes it terrifying, Asa, everyone. Really, that guy, Slowinski, he's only one consonant away from being Slowitsky. That guy has, I guess, what you would call a puncher's chance of actually going to the Congress of the United States of America. And the very thought of that fills me with a certain kind of... Because this guy, I mean, it's pretty obvious. You'd have to see the video, but he presses all the little right-wing buttons. He's been to visit Gun Owners of America, and he's been to visit, and he's NRA, and he votes, and he's going to run the bums out of D.C. I don't know who wants to be in a D.C. he's in, but no. That guy, that moron, who makes Steve King, who makes Louis Gromit or Gohmert look like freaking Einstein, that guy could wind up in the Congress of the United States of America. Whoa. Yeah, it's sobering, isn't it? And there's ever so many of these. I had a Moran nomination this evening from Tim from L.A. And I don't know, Tim. You know, we grandmothered Mussolini, Godzilla from Wasilla, Caribou Barbie, the half-baked Alaskan. We kind of grandmothered her because every time she played Moran Monday, she won. But this from Addicting Info. Memo to Sarah Palin, if you are going to denounce social media activism, you might want to do it from somewhere other than Facebook and Twitter. In the meanwhile, we can all have a good laugh at Palin's expense. It's no surprise that Palin should jump on the right-wing bandwagon attacking Michelle Obama for joining Bring Back Our Girls, the Bring Back Our Girls Twitter campaign. The right has decided for some reason to pretend that a Twitter campaign is the only action the U.S. is taking to find and rescue the Nigerian schoolgirls. Yeah, here is here's the half-term, half-baked Alaska governor from May the 16th. I'm not going to do the voice. I don't have it in me. I'm sorry. Diplomacy via Twitter is the lazy, ineffectual, naive, and insulting way for America's leaders to deal with major national and international issues. It's embarrassing. And what is the Obama administration's weapon of choice in this battle for these young girls' lives? Hashtagging tweets on social media. I kinda sorta doubt a tweet will intimidate the kidnappers much, so if you're going to jump in and do something... Oh dear, I'm doing the voice. It happens automatically. So if you're going to jump in and do something about these Islamic terrorists at all, then do it right, do it firmly, and kick their ass. Yeah, Sarah, why don't you send Tad up there to take care of that? I mean, I'm sure he knows how to deal with those people. Right? Yeah. Oof. And it goes, but by the way, yeah, the right wing is apparently hopping, and I guess monkey bats do that, don't they? They hop up and down and flap their little bat wings, and yeah, they're hopping mad at people for the Bring Back Our Girls hashtag campaign. They're not very bright, are they? They are not at all very bright, because Was anybody under the impression that the that Boko Haram would release the young women it has kidnapped because someone tweeted, "Bring back our girl"? No. Only a moron would think that way. The Bring Back Our Girls hashtag is nothing except an attempt. It's just an attempt to raise awareness. Then again, since we're talking about teabaggers, I don't know, maybe awareness raising is the last thing in the world you want. Oh, by the way, Tim, I sent a note earlier today via Skype. Happy birthday to you, Tim. It is Tim from L.A.'s birthday today. He shares a birthday with Malcolm X. Happy birthday, Tim. Oh, no, the NRA. Well, wait, let's check the mailbag again. Note coming in from Marty. Someone needs to tell Palin that if she feels that instead of hashtagging, we need to go in and kick some ass, she should lead by example and take the point. Would you follow a quitter into a firefight in the bush? Because, you know, not me. I mean, she is. She's a quitter. But the... Now, this story from TPM is the slug May 19th, which is today. So I guess it can be said that the proud... Freedom Protector Woods over at the NRA are taking their cues from the half-baked Alaskan. And man in search of a Thorazine dart, Wayne LaPierre. Well, actually, it's their lobbying arm, but you know how it goes. This month, in response to terrorists kidnapping 300 girls in Nigeria, First Lady Michelle Obama locked and loaded for battle with her own selfie with the unconditional surrender demand, "Bring back our girls." Tyrants and terrorists like murderers, rapists, and robbers understand only one thing: force. They laugh at and are emboldened by weakness. That is why it is important to preserve and promote the right to keep and bear arms. An armed citizenry deters violence. And then they went after. They also went after from. They went after Jen Psaki from the State Department, who had posed for a photograph while holding a sign reading hashtag United for Ukraine. Ms. Psaki's and Mrs. Obama's naivete, thinking that Vladimir Putin or Boko Haram terrorists will change their ways because of tweets, would provide ample fodder for their ridicule were we so inclined. But while we appreciate the value of maintaining a sense of humor in the face of things that are disagreeable, we do so only within reasonable limits. There is nothing funny in this instance. We will not stake our personal safety on "please don't hurt me" tweets. Instead, we will exercise our right to arms by acquiring the best arms for defensive purposes and becoming proficient in their use, and we will do everything possible in 2016 to help elect a president who understands the importance of maintaining strength, whether dealing with common criminals here at home or with international criminals on the world stage. We cannot allow Islamic Sharia law to take over our great nation and our precious bodily fluids. Fluoride mandrake in little children's ice cream. Pour me a glass of grain alcohol and rainwater and whatever it is you limeys drink. Fluoride, Mandrake. Fluoride. They seek to sap our precious bodily fluids, our purity of essence. Yes. Because, you know, when the First Lady of the United States tweets a picture of herself saying, bring back our girls, that's just an invitation for Boko Haram to come to the United States of America and start taking our girls. And if anybody in the world is going to keep our girls ignorant, keep our girls in the dark, keep our girls illiterate, by God, that's our job. We're the NRA. But because Michelle Obama tweeted, bring back our girls, that's a clear sign that we need to go and buy more guns because there aren't enough guns in enough hands of enough lunatics in America. No, no, there's not. We need more guns to protect America from Boko Haram and Vladimir Putin. This is serious. It's a real threat. The next thing, one day you're out there protecting freedom. Wolverines! And the next thing you know, Boko Haram's come to town, they've stolen your children, and you've got to go into the bush with your trusty AR-15 or your trusty AK-47 and not your sissy please don't hurt me tweets. Now that's real. That's real. I mean, I added the purity of essence and precious bodily fluids part, but really, that's real. Just like it's real that the Conserva Crush, Ben Carson, Conserva Crush Ben Carson, went on the TV box and explained to me why this. Here's how bad it is over at NBC. They invited Ben Carson to appear on Meet the Prestitutes on Sunday. Let's check out this maven of conservative thinking.
Carson, how do you define yourself in politics? A lot of people talking about you as a rising star in the Republican Party. You're not a party guy, regardless. But you have certainly put government on trial in a way.
Wait, what? He's not a party guy, regardless? You know, once upon a time when I was back in college, it would have been fighting words. Dude, you are so not a party guy. I am too a party guy. A party with the best of them. So David Gregory, who has the journalistic chops of Beaver Cleaver, does the work for Ben Carson by saying, "Oh, you're not a party guy." You know, he's not really a frothing at the mouth, hardcore right wing nut, vicious. No, he's none of those things. Of course not. No way.
Here's one of the things you said about the Affordable Care Act that raised a lot of eyebrows. I'll play it.
You know, Obamacare is really, I think, the worst thing that has happened in this nation since slavery. And it is, in a way, it is slavery, in a way, because it is making all of us subservient to the government. And it was never about health care. It was about control.
So people who have health care now who didn't have it before, I suspect would disagree strongly with you. But I wonder, in addition, is that really how you wanted to be defined, how you want to put government on trial, in effect, in a political way?
Well, first of all, recognize what I said, worst thing since slavery. Didn't say that it was slavery. People who are well-read, and particularly who have...
Well, you said it is slavery in a way, because it is making us all subservient to the government.
That's right.
That's what you said.
Stop the presses. David Gregory apparently found a little bit of somewhat chitinous, gelatinous material, vaguely resembling spine. Because, see, it's true. Dr. Carson did say that Obamacare is slavery. There's no getting around it. He really, really, really did that. And do we have to play fun with history? Because it's not. No. Obamacare has never caused anyone to have a young child taken from its mother and sold to someone else. No one has ever been tied to a post and whipped until dead as a result of Obamacare. Do you know why? Do you know why when he made those remarks, Ben Carson went down the slavery road? Because he couldn't get away with going down the Holocaust road. Because, see, they've been, he and his anti-abortion freak buddies have been playing that little game for years. There is an abortion Holocaust going on in America. 30 million babies. Right? Yeah. But never mind. Let's go back to our buddy Ben.
And I said, in a way, anything is slavery that robs you of your ability to control your own life. And when you take the most important thing that you have, which is your health care, and you put that in the hands of government bureaucrats, I think you have done the wrong thing. And as I was about to say, you go back and you look at the neo-Marxist literature and look at what they say. Don't have to listen to what I say about taking control of health care of the populace and making the people dependent. This is not what America is about. Do I believe in health care for everybody? Absolutely. But I think there are much better ways to get there, which leave the care in the hands of patients and of doctors.
Senator. Yeah. What? Okay, he believes in health care for everybody. Before the Affordable Care Act came along, well, one, we are still not at health care for everybody. Come Wednesday, I'm going to be going to a rally here, take time out from going door to door in House and Senate office buildings in the ongoing effort to get a little closer to a sort of surcease of Appalachian sorrows. Wednesday afternoon, and this may be in the way of a program announcement. I don't know how long it's going to go on. It depends on if I can accomplish my goals. Wednesday afternoon, there is a single-payer rally on the Senate lawn, the South Senate lawn, and it will feature, there's a rally afterward, and there's a panel discussion in the Dirksen Senate office building. And I think I need to be there. Do you? I'm hoping maybe to hear something meaningful, but see, or maybe a way forward. Maybe even advance my crazy idea that someday if we get a responsible Congress, that we would run the Medicaid eligibility threshold for expanded Medicaid up to 200%. And hopefully then, at some point in time, in places like Montgomery and Jackson and Atlanta and what have you, Tallahassee, Columbia, Raleigh. Maybe have a few tens of thousands of people surround the state houses and say, listen, we're not leaving until we get expanded Medicaid. Because in point of fact, that is a single-payer program that's administered through the states, just not the federal government. We just have, oh, did I mention, yeah, get a few thousand. Because this, I don't understand why this is so difficult to conceive. If one place has the millions of people available to do this, it would have to be Texas. How about 10, 20,000 people surrounding the governor's mansion, saying, or the state house, saying, this is not a protest for Thursday. This is a protest that's going to continue until we have expanded Medicaid. And let the fools sit there and scream about Obamacare and scream about, oh, what are we now? Okay, did you notice that Ben Carson has jumped into a new kind of sleazy? It's no longer socialism, it's neo-Marxism. I think the Kenyan Muslim anti-colonialist Sharia law fascist Islamic communist usurper in the White House has been promoted. Yeah. He's been promoted from socialist to neo-Marxist. Don't you love it? Isn't that wonderful? Hey, Barack, you're somebody now. You're a neo-Marxist. Then again, the Honorable Joyce Rogers Brown, who sits on, the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, once upon a time, she was a Maoist. But, by God, she saw the light, became a hardcore right-wing Republican, and now she's got a lifetime appointment to the bench. Well, howdy-do. See how it works? Yeah. Neo-Marxist. We got to remember that. Neo-Marxist President Barack Hussein Obama. By the way, lots and lots and lots of good giggles over the course of the weekend watching the absolute falling apart of the American Sprang. Many, many, many Facebook repostings of the picture of the Gadsden flag snake with the stupid look on its face and the buck-toothed fangs and the, you know, and the words, "Don't read to me." God, these people are stupid. Just on and on. Oh, and I got to find this one real quick because it would not be fair to even think about doing more in Monday. Without reference to this. Because this just... Hold on here. This shouldn't take too long. Oh, there it is. No. Ah, here we go. Joe posted this on my Facebook page, and the minute I saw it, I just knew that it had More in Monday written all over it. It comes, of course, from Rand Paul and that thing on his head. Um, liberalinkentucky.blogspot.com has the video. Rand Paul and that thing on his head were explaining some economic theory, you know, for us proles. Here we go.
And the way you get out of a recession is home prices have to fall, so wages have to rise. Nobody wants to have a lower wage, but everybody wants to have a job. So you will have a job at a lower wage. So if you've been out of a job for a year, unfortunately, when you get a job, you'll have to choose a job at a lower wage. But once that happens, the economy will recover and get going. It's sort of the top line that you have to accept.
Got that. I know the audio is a little bit dodgy. That's just how it shows up on the interweb tubes. But noted libertarian ophthalmologist and man who wears a thing on his head, Rand Paul, who has probably not missed a meal since, the Nixon administration, if ever? Rand Paul, who was really treated with, you know, the plagiarist, treated with seriousness as a sitting member of the new United States Senate, really, really did stand there in front of people who one presumes were just absolutely transfixed by his brilliance. And explained that casting people into the depths of poverty is tough love. I mean, if you've been out of work for more than a year, you're just going to have to go to work for lower wages, you see. It's tough love. But we want everybody to have a job, right? Hello, Milton Friedman in a cheap toupee. So, if you think that America is about a living wage, or somehow trying to do right by your family or make one generation do better than the one previous? No, you're wrong. MRCA stands for low wages. Because when you're not making enough money to buy food, according to Rand Paul and that thing on his head, you are receiving tough love. I think we could argue that Rand Paul would probably like to love several of us right into the dirt. And then this. Dear God, this via Haley in Arkansas. Wow. And for it, we have to go to Tony
Norman. Yes, Mother Bates. Perkins.
Mm-hmm. Just as Rand Paul feels free to define what love is and how much of it each of us are to receive in the way of wages. Well, Mother Bates's boy, a few days back, declared that the people who are members of the clergy, we could have saved this for Wednesday, but Tony Perkins is a moron. And I do not like to cheat anyone out of their due on Moran Monday. They've got this goofy program called Washington Watch. You can only imagine. It's, I guess, a radio something or another. No, Tony Perkins says that if you're a minister and you're out there doing liberal stuff, well, you don't have the same rights as good, upstanding, Bible-believing, God-fearing Christian ministers do.
I wanted to see if I can get your response to the members of the clergy in Charlotte that are suing for the right to perform gay marriage, saying that the ban on gay marriage infringes on their religious rights.
Right.
It's my understanding that they are a Christian organization, so I'm kind of... It's normally the other way around, so I'm kind of curious to hear what you got to say about it, and I know you don't have much time, so I'm going to hop off. Thanks.
All right, John, thanks for listening. Thanks for the call. I would use that term Christian loosely. That title is let's talk biblical. All right,
No, before we start talking biblical, Tony, let's talk about what you just said. I would use that term Christian loosely. I think Tony Perkins uses the term Christian loosely he lives it loosely. I think Tony Perkins is a walking horror to the memory of the preaching and teaching of the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi Yeshua of Nazareth. But that's me. But notice what he doesn't have any problem doing. And this is where the trouble ariseth. Tony.
Yes, Mother Bates.
Perkins. Doesn't have any problem declaring who is and who isn't Christian enough to suit him. He is an enforcer of a certain amount of, and certain kind of, orthodoxy. Tony Perkins, who thinks that God worries more about a lump of tissue than he does about a starving, real, already born child. And we'll save the debate as to whether or not God worries about anything for later. Tony is quite comfortable declaring who really is a Christian. So if you are, Jim Wallace of Sojourners, you're not a Christian. If you're one of the pastors from the United Churches of Christ who in North Carolina are, in fact, suing for the right to perform marriages, then you're not Christian enough to suit Tony Perkins. You're not Christian at all, really, and we'll get to that. But understand the North Carolina issue from the perspective in which it should be understood. Oddly enough, they took a position in North Carolina that I've been arguing for a very long time. That if a church is willing to perform the so-called sacrament of marriage for two men or two women, then it is actually an imposition, a violation of their First Amendment rights to freedom of religion to say that they cannot do so. To say, I mean, it's called the Establishment Clause for a reason, right? To say that a wedding ceremony performed by, say, a Roman Catholic priest of a man and a woman is entitled to governmental recognition, but a United Church of Christ wedding ceremony performed by a cleric from that body of two men or two women is not valid, is to effectively establish right-wing fundamentalist Christianity as a state religion, because by definition, that religion doing the traditional family values merges, that bunch are getting preferential treatment from the government. And this is without ever even having to make take recourse to the 14th Amendment. In other words, this is not necessarily about the rights of the two people who want to get married. It is about the rights of the church to administer the sacrament and have that sacrament treated the same as the government treats other sacraments from other churches. And like I said, this is where we get into, this is where the trouble happens. Because I want to get this said just so. You'll note that Tony Perkins has no problem declaring who is and is not a Christian. And for that matter, neither does Pastor John Starve Hagee. Neither does Kenneth Copeland. Neither does Franklin Graham. You know, Billy's son. And neither do any of these other vile, porcine practitioners of fundamentalism in this country. They freely declare what is sufficiently Christian and what is not. And we haven't even touched the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops yet. And I don't want them touching me. Jesus loves the little children. You're not Jesus. Get your hands off my kid. No. The problem lies in the fact that the practitioners of I would argue, more humane and perhaps in some ways more true to the message Christianity will not, for the life of them, denounce as unchristian a Tony Perkins, a Pat Robertson, a Ken Ham. And that allows the right-wing freaks to define Christianity. See, as someone on the outside looking in, we, non-Christians, we can't declare what is or is not Christianity any more than we can declare what is or is not proper Islam or good Judaism or good Shintoism or good Hinduism because we're not of the body. We're not in the club. You wouldn't want us in it anyway, but we're not in it. Therefore, it falls to the people who profess to give a hoot about the faith to declare whether or not someone is apostate or not. And Tony Perkins wastes no time in doing that. So that means when the right-wingers do it, and the practitioners of some sort of more progressive Christianity say, well, you know, let's just pray for him. That means he's won. How many times in the wake of the attacks of September 11th, 2001, did we hear right-wing Americans say, well, if them Muslims ain't like that Obama, they need to denounce him. And not let him be Muslim no more. Right? Well, is sauce for the goose not sauce for the gander? Can no one out there say that Tony Perkins is not a Christian? That he is not doing the work of Christ on earth? That he is not feeding Yeshua's sheep, as the saying goes? Because if no one will, then by definition, he is a Christian. Now, you know how much hate flows daily out of Tony Perkins' sewer of a mouth. And yet, according to Christian doctrine that is largely agreed upon, that man, believing all the right stuff, is going to drop dead someday. Come, Lord Jesus, come, Lord Jesus. Soon and very soon. He's going to drop dead someday, and the minute he does, that little soul is going to go flying out of his body, and he's going to go up and sit right there next to Jebus, because Jebus loves him so much that he's done saved him from the eternal fiery pits of hell, which was prepared for the devil, his angels, and all the other people that God loves so much he's willing to torture eternally. Yeah. Back to Tony.
Here's the deal. It's like with the freedom of the Religious Freedom Restoration Act that we worked on in Mississippi, that failed in Arizona and other places. Here's a test of what is a true religious freedom. A freedom that's based on orthodox religious viewpoints. It has to have...
Ding, 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 ding. You caught that, right? A freedom that is based upon orthodox religious viewpoints. So if you ain't orthodox, you ain't playing. You're not Christian. You might think that you're going to go sashay and ride up to the pearly gates after you breathed your last, and Peter's going to look at you and say, well, come on in, my good and devoted servant. But he's just going to reach over and he's going to pull that lever, the trap door under, you're going straight to hell. Yep.
A track record. It has to come forth from religious orthodoxy.
Notice the sort of tattered remnants of any kind of Aristotelian logic there. I happen to have the transcript here. Let's do this again. Here's a test of what is a true religious freedom. A freedom that's based on orthodox religious viewpoints. It has to have a track record. It has to come forth from religious orthodoxy. You cannot define a term by using the term you're defining in the definition of the term. True religious freedom is freedom that's based on religious freedom viewpoints that agree with the religious freedom viewpoints that I say constitute religious freedom. See how smart I am? Now, let's go on here because apparently there's a few more pronouncements to come from on high.
You cannot point to the Christian faith and say that same-sex marriage has been a key teaching of the church. You can only point to the opposite, that the church has stood against sexual immorality.
Cheating. Cheating, 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 cheating. You notice how he quickly slid from marriage to sexual immorality? Oh, this little freak's a pro.
Church. You can only point to the opposite, that the church has stood against sexual immorality in terms of sexual relations of those outside of marriage, and in particular, homosexual behavior. There is no place, there is nothing for them to stand on and say that same-sex marriage has standing in the Orthodox Christian faith.
Can we stop there for a second, please? Having Tony Perkins out there pontificating about orthodoxy is somewhat significantly stranger than having Mickey Mouse pontificate on the origin of the species. Orthodox means something. The Russian Orthodox Church, the Armenian Orthodox Church, the Serbian Orthodox Church, the Syrian Orthodox Church, the Greek Orthodox Church. I don't see Tony Perkins wearing a beard down to his belly button and some sort of black dress, robe, whatever. I don't think he's been ordained cosmopolitan of anything. I don't think he's even been ordained Appletini of anything. I got to think that, you know, maybe in places like Moscow. Now, to be fair though, the Russian Orthodox faith actually hates gay people more than Tony Perkins does. But I'm betting Tony Perkins, to the extent that he celebrates, for instance, Easter by doing anything other than going to a strip joint and getting a lap dance, I'm guessing he doesn't even celebrate Orthodox Easter. Right? No. He's a heretic too. And that's the problem here. Everybody's a heretic to one degree or another, an atheist to one degree or another, of some faith. That's why you have to have the absolute freedom for all faiths to worship in peace. And that's why the government has to be kept absolutely separate and apart from it. Now, if you've got, say, let's say somebody is elected to the Congress with a deep and abiding Quaker respect for the sanctity of human life, like Richard Nixon. No, you know Richard Nixon was a Quaker, right? They never got around to excommunicating him. Now, they excommunicated my lovely wife Agnes's great-great-great-great-great-great-multi-great-grandfather, John Bartram, for saying that his relationship with the Almighty was his and not theirs. Yeah, excommunicated, but no, the Quakers never did quite get around to excommunicating Richard Nixon. No, not after the red baiting, not after the Vietnam War, not after the illegal invasions and bombings of Cambodia and Laos, not after Watergate, never. You know who else didn't get excommunicated? Nah, 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 you can't make me say it. But that's the problem. As long as Tony Perkins can declare what orthodoxy is, there's no orthodoxy. I mean, if you were to gauge orthodoxy by the way Tony Perkins lives his life, who knows what you would find out orthodoxy is? Maybe orthodoxy is having sex with farm animals. Norman?
Yes, Mother.
Or chopping up women in showers while the black and white rolls. But nonetheless, he's going to do it.
So I know they're playing games here, trying to turn the effort that so many Americans are now faced with of preserving religious freedom. They're now trying to do a jiu-jitsu move and say, all right, well, we're going to use religious freedom to say we have a right to do same-sex marriage. Well, there is no foundation for that. There's no orthodox Christian holding that has ever said marriage is between people of the same sex.
Of course.
I wanted to see if I can get...
Oh, no. Shut up, Cletus. I clicked twice when I should have clicked once. The problem is that there is a history of same-sex marriage. They're called convents and monasteries. Yeah. Men devoting themselves to other men and living with other men and wearing dresses all their lives. No history of same-sex marriage. Nope. Can't see it. La, 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 la. Can't see it. Oh, Jesus, we are, I kid you not, more and poor this evening. We're also bill-paying ability poor this evening. I'm not kidding. We've got at least a $350 hole to fill in. Dr. John has kindly issued a challenge for to double the first 50 bucks that comes in. 20 of that has been matched. Nothing in the first hour of broadcasting. Nothing. Not a thing. So, you know, just a reminder, this doesn't happen by the goodwill of internet service providers, and no. There are real bills to be paid. And well, the PayPal button's there if you'd like to help keep this afloat. Getting in a $450 hole on the first day of the week, May 19th, it gets to be troublesome. A note coming in from Robert in Australia. Subject line, no bureaucrat has ever told me I can't see a doctor. Hi, Bob. Before I start sounding like a broken record, I pay my taxes. That includes the Medicare levy. When I see my doctor, I sign the form at the end of my visit, and that's it. Some doctors do charge a small copay. Some doctors, specialists, charge way more than the Medicare rates for service. I pay my specialist in cash, 2 visits a year. I get about 60% of that back from Medicare. No bureaucrat has ever told me I can't see a doctor. Of course not. Of course not. The bureaucrats all live amongst the weird squirming little spirochetes inside the right-wingers' brains. Because these are the people who dreamed up death panels. Ron and Raleigh with a note. Hey, Bob, aren't these the people that can't seem to find a right to privacy in the Constitution? Yes. Oh dear, you're going to go down the road into the. Look out, Ron. There's a conundrum right up ahead. However, even though Yeshua ben Yosef never said a mumbling word about homosexuality, they can find all kinds of anti-homosexual doctrine in the Bible or Christianity. There you go. P.S., says Ron and Raleigh, I think those dresses are called cassocks. By Jove, I think you're right. Marty asking, not of the body, is that an unintentional reference to a Star Trek episode? Did I miss one? Oh, dear. Thanks very much to Sal. Sal has now taken us to $30 toward meeting Dr. John's Monday challenge. Thank you, Sal. Thank you immensely. We will take a top-of-the-hour break. A reminder, of course, we are broadcasting live from the headquarters of the 8 campaign. You can find out all about the 8 campaign by going to ACHEACT.org, ACHEACT.org. We'll be here for the next 2 weeks. Agnes is back in the studio when Dr. Bill returns from his long sojourn across the country. She will be producing Dr. Bill's program that begins next week. But the key here is that the telephone processing unit is kaput. Yeah. Pushing up daisies. Don't even know if it can be fixed. So that's going to have to wait until I get back to do more diagnostic work. So we don't have it. Otherwise, Agnes would be sitting there producing from home. I'd be connected to her, and we'd be taking calls. But that's not going to happen. So the only way to take calls during the program is via Skype. And Skype, of course, Bob Kincaid Horn is the contact address. If you've never done a Skype call to the horn before, just send me a contact request. I'll clear it, and we'll be chatting before you know what done hit you. It's just that easy. So that's how we'll work it. I don't know, maybe depending on, I'll put out a little feeler early on this week. If you guys are into it, and if longtime Horn Molloy Skype chat group moderator Sparky is into it, maybe we'll have a little bit of extended Friday on the front porch. Maybe we'll have some thorn in the side porch Thursday or some prayer meeting porch Wednesday or maybe even Titanic porch Tuesday. Who knows? So just maybe shoot me a note and let me know if you're up for it or what have you. Oh, thank you very much, Sparky, letting me know that Lottie said he'll help walk me through the Java chat issues after the program. Hallelujah. Thank you very much, and thank you, Lottie. Lottie, of course, one of our longtime moderators in the chat room. I remembered the screw-up with Skype almost exactly after I clicked the update Skype button. It's the same thing as there's a measurement for that interval of time in which you realize my keys are in the car. Oh, my God, I've locked the door. And then the door slams shut. It's the same thing. So if we get 20 more bucks to match Dr. John's challenge, a $450 deficit will become a $350 deficit, and then hopefully we can go to work on that. Or maybe we just won't have the horn anymore after June. I mean, it can go either way. Let's see. It is. I am. I'm going to take a break. It's about 7 minutes past the hour. And oh, just trying to find a bumper. Okay, yeah. Just going to roll a little music and take a break. And if you want to join in the conversation, you know, do it via Skype. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. We'll be right back. 15 minutes past the hour. This is the Horn. Head on radio network.com. I'm of course Bob, and it is Moran Monday. Oh brother, is it Moran Monday? Wow! Thank you very much, Richard. Richard just took a humongous bite. Finished meeting Dr. John's challenge, and took a humongous bite out of the deficit. So I can say proudly that we've only got $200 in fundraising to go to get even with where we are. Thank you. Thank you very much. Let's go to the Skype line. Jeremy's with us from Vermont. Hey, Jeremy. Oh, Jeremy.
Yeah, Bob, you know.
Yeah, I got you.
Okay. Hold on a second. Yeah, I was calling to say, did you happen to catch the news about Michelle Waddell Bachman getting the DWI this weekend?
No, what?
Yeah, I saw a news flash that she had gotten a DWI. I think it was either Saturday night or Sunday morning.
Oh, stop. No, stop the presses. Let's see, M-I-C-H-E-1-L-E, Bachman D-U-I. Well, bust my buttons. How do you do? Okay, we gotta. You can't. Hoax. Michelle Bachman not arrested for DUI.
Oh, that's too bad.
Wait. Okay, this doesn't. Okay, one site is newslow.com. But then CelebTwitty says, Congresswoman Michelle Bachman was not arrested for DUI after smoking pot in Fort Collins, Colorado, despite reports to the contrary. Oh, my goodness, that would have been delicious.
Yeah, it would have been delicious if it was true, I guess.
Let's see. Yeah, okay. Newslow is a satire site. Oh, see, that's just a pity, Jeremy, because I was all ready to go with the whole bit about how she was just innocently drinking water and Jeebus turned it into wine.
Yeah, I know. I thought this is too good to be true with her reputation having this happen to her, so I fell for it, I guess. Oh, well.
Darn the luck.
I do find it very ironic, though, that every time Sarah Palin opens her mouth about military people or military service and how, you know, people aren't doing good enough or not using enough force, I'm sure everyone remembers that back around Obama's original election, her son, she was bragging about he had joined the military and he was a great American hero, and coming out to find out after she never said anything about it, her son was going to go to prison or join the military. Those are...
What was his name? He was... isn't he the one that was caught in the... meth bust or something and had the choice of, you know, prison or military? Do I remember that right? Jeremy? Oops. Oh, there he is. Jeremy's back. All better now. Do I have you again, Jeremy? Yeah, there's Jeremy.
How
should
you give that?
Oh, Sarah Palin, military, her kid, that?
Yeah, exactly. The story about how he had to go to jail.
Yeah.
But she tried to, hey, Palin is basically always a wonderful kid. He joined the military. He's a hero, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, she's Sarah's kid, or he's Sarah's kid. He has to be a hero. He lived for 18 years with that monstrosity as a mother.
Right, yeah. I don't know.
I know.
Still there, Bob?
No, I'm here.
Okay.
Are you
a part of town, obviously it has some... What was that?
I was going to say, you got sketchy wireless?
Yeah, I want better service in that 10 seconds. Get it under my house.
Ah, okay.
I'll clear up here in, like, 5 seconds. I'm just in a dip next to the airbase, so there's no service here.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Okay, should be better now.
Okay. By the way, Sparky reminding me, the Palin kid in question is Track. Of course it is.
Surprise, David. Of course it is. It rhymes with frack. Who would guess? I mean...
We never saw that coming, did we?
No, never saw that coming. I mean, And there's her husband. He's another special brand himself, too. But I don't know. I'm just kind of a loss for the things she does lately. Her and how Dick Cheney pops up every couple of weeks and says something about Obama not being...
Oh, dear God. No. I got that one in the stack. I was picking out stories for the Horn website. And I ran across the headline, Dick Cheney wants Hillary Clinton held accountable for Benghazi terror attacks. Okay, Dick, you first.
Well, you notice, like, last week, like, we'd mentioned that they didn't show up for the 9/11 museum memorial dedication. None of them were there.
Right.
Because, I mean...
Well, really. they don't need a museum. They lived it.
And how none of these guys leave the country because they fear for their own freedom, for the most part.
Yeah. Yeah, can't leave America.
No, I can't leave America. But I don't want to let you go because all I really want to mention was that Sarah Palin and stuff and the other thing. Oh, wait, I do have one more thing.
Yes, please.
I just wanna...
Oh, no. Bad segment.
I linked it to the Horn Facebook page, but... It's of Pat Robertson interviewing a former wrestler named Lex Luger.
I saw that.
He couldn't get his name right. He kept calling him Lex Luthor, as in Batman, I mean Superman.
Right. Gene Hackman in the big budget Marlon Brando movie.
Yeah, exactly. So if you watch that video, Pat's like, "Oh, you're Lex Luthor. Luthor's from the Batman comics." So not only could he not get his name right, but
Right. There was a case we all read back when I was having a cup of coffee in law school about, I think it was about superseding and intervening causes. My, isn't that a mouthful? And it was a case, and the editors, you know, the editors, law school textbooks are pretty dry affairs any way you look at them. But the editors of the book had tried to find at least marginally interesting cases. And this was a story about a woman who caused like a multi-car pileup or something because she had decided that she could fly. And some sort of god-awful car automotive crisis ensued. And she, in explaining herself to the judge, she said, well... And there was some religious mumbo-jumbo in front of it. I think it had to do with the rapture. And then she said, and then I realized if Batman could fly, so could I. And bless those nerdy little first-year law students' heart. You know what the first thing they figured out of that case was, Jeremy?
This woman
is truly insane because Batman can't fly.
Well, he can, but he has cables to do it with, but still, yeah, I mean...
No, he cannot will himself to violate the laws of gravity.
Yeah, he can't lift off the ground without a grappling hook, essentially. Yeah, you're right about that part.
That grappling hook business, that's not flying, that's climbing with style.
Well, he does do the art of falling called gliding with his cape, so that does happen.
Right, to quote Toy Story, that's falling with style.
Yes, exactly. that is funny. You know, what I found interesting, more interesting about that clip was that Pat tried to link Lex Luthor, not Luthor, to Samson from the Bible and said that he was so immersed in his body, and we see how that turned out. Well, in so many of these cases, a lot of these guys go conservative after they leave the ring for, I'm not sure what for a reason, to make up for what they've done in their life, I guess. And it just so happens that I remember in the 80s, early 90s, Randy Macho Man Savage. Most people recognize that name from the Slim Jim commercials.
Yeah.
His wife was Miss Elizabeth. I can't think what her real name was. But I want to say 5 or 6 years ago, she died. It was either in a heroin or a cocaine overdose. Guess who was in the room when she died?
No, who?
Lex Luger.
Oh.
So, he evidently has turned to Pat Robertson and the church to forgive him his sins, that he did drugs and people died under his watch when they were doing them together. And I find the whole thing sickening, but I was more interested in the fact that he couldn't get the character's name in either storyline, correct?
Well, you know, someday Pat's up north of 80 now, and some days the Aricept works, and some days it doesn't, Jeremy.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, well, that was my More on Monday nomination, so I'll let someone else talk now.
All right, you take care, Jeremy. Good to talk to you.
You too, thanks. Bye.
Now. Calling from Vermont, our buddy Jeremy, and... worth noting that Jeremy's already told me he's reaching out to the Vermont delegation as we pull together some work for the AIC campaign, trying to get the AIC Act introduced in the Senate. Just to go back to what I mentioned in conversation with Jeremy, yeah, really. It's Fox News Radio TV Rwanda, so of course they had Dick Cheney on. Oy. Chris Wallace hosting a hard-hitting interview with Dick Cheney. I haven't even issued a tennis ball and duct tape warning. Well, if ever there was one, this is it.
What do you think about Benghazi? Do you think that she did anything wrong, and should she be held responsible for the events surrounding that attack?
She was Secretary of State at the time that it happened. She was one of the first in Washington to know about it. I think she clearly bears responsibility for whatever the State Department did or didn't do with respect to that that crisis. I do think it's a major issue. I don't think we've heard the last of it yet, and I would expect that she will be held accountable during the course of the campaign.
Mrs. Cheney, you said recently that you thought the Clintons must be pleased that Vanity Fair magazine ran an article written by Monica Lewinsky. Why on earth do you think they'd want to see Lewinsky?
Wait, this is a tag team job? The Count Dicula and his wife, the pornographic novel authoress? What? Oh, I can't wait for this. Now, she's upset about the Monica Lewinsky article. Remember, this is the woman who wrote, not that there's anything wrong with it, but when you write it and then you talk about what a family values person you are and how upright and moral you are, well, then, you know, the area starts getting a little gray. The name of the novel, remember, was Sisters. I will never forget, it was almost impossible to get one's hands on it during the 2004 re-election, well, election campaign, because we remember 2000. It was almost but a person posting online as Mrs. Tarquin Biscuit Barrel. Oh, those were the heady days of great internet handles. Mrs. Tarquin Biscuit Barrel posted Sisters online, chapter by chapter. I think Mrs. Tarquin Biscuit Barrel actually had to type it in, the entire novel. And that's why you never hear much from Mrs. Tarquin Biscuit Barrel anymore, because she's probably still getting daily shock treatments and Thorazine darts in the neck, having had to, her prose was too prolix. No, really.
Back in the public eye, and do you think that the Lewinsky scandal is a legitimate issue for Hillary Clinton in 2016?
Well, I was really paying the Clintons a large compliment. I was saying how clever they are politically, and that it seemed to me if you had something that might come up during the campaign that would be damaging, it was very smart to get it out of the way early. So that's my case, Chris, and I'm staying with it.
Okay. Mr. Vice President, let's turn to the standoff in Ukraine.
Oh, for sake, no, let's don't. Two jerks in one. Have you got that? In the paranoid spirochete infested space that is Mary Cheney's brain, or no, Lynn, sorry. They run together for me after a while. The Vanity Fair Monica Lewinsky article was a cleverly placed piece of agitprop from the forever scheming Hillary as a means of bolstering, keeping Monica quiet. Well, why didn't she just take her out and have her shot like Vince Foster? That movie, The Survivors, didn't make that much money, but God, it was brilliant. Jerry Reed, Robin Williams, and Walter Matthau. And after a question like, what about Benghazi to Dick Cheney, I can't help but think of a classic line from that film. Oh, Chris Wallace, you'll smoke a turd in hell for that one. Who? And I ask this sincerely, not rhetorically. Who? Who the F? And apparently I'm not the only one asking. Got a note here from Jim pointing out that Count Dicula was called a coward on national TV this morning. Don Imus referring to him as a coward on Fox Business News. Apparently Don Imus doesn't like his job anymore. And told Cheney to shut his effing mouth and just go away. Welcome to the club, Don. But what relevance? Who books these people? And this is because I don't know how the process works. Does Chris Wallace say to his booker, go get me Dick Cheney because I want to know what he thinks about Benghazi? Because if that's the case, then the problem is with Chris Wallace. But if the booking department, on the other hand, is still taking calls from, oh, you know, what I'd really like to do is I'd like to get on and talk about how I'd like to waterboard Hillary about Benghazi and find out what she knew. Oh, it makes me hot. Then, I mean, yes, it's Fox. Of course it's Fox. There's no getting away from it's Fox. But damn. I think Benghazi is a major issue. I don't think we've heard the last of it yet, and I expect that she'll be held accountable during the course of the campaign. Well, of course she will, assuming there is a campaign, because, you know, no announcements have been made yet. See, this is another one of those atheist moments for me. Because when the guy who was vice president, when the president decided to cut Brush instead of deal with a CIA warning that said Osama bin Laden determined to strike inside U.S., when that guy says, I think she clearly bears responsibility for whatever the State Department did or didn't do with respect to that crisis. Well, you know, the fact that there's no lightning bolt right out of the sky the minute that he says that, leaving nothing but a little greasy spot where Richard B. big-time Dick Cheney used to be, I mean, that's confirmation for me. Because I'm just that much of a hard-ass. I don't want to see Dick Cheney punished in the hereafter. I want to see him punished right here and right now. Waterboarding would be nice. Hey, you know what? Maybe there's enough miles left on that perfectly decent human being's heart to give it a third chance. Maybe get into the chest of a decent human being this time instead of some sort of undead misanthrope with a hard-on for murder. Go away, Dick. And the sad thing is, it's like this for the next hour and 25 minutes. I kid you not. Jack in Shreveport noting, don't forget that Lynn Cheney has a book about Madison coming out, or out already. James Madison was gay? Learn something new every day. I don't want to think about the scenes of where Dolly lovingly considers a lock of James's hair. No, please, no. That's been woven into a wreath. Yeah, because see, that was one of the real winners about Sisters by Lynn Cheney. It not only had lesbian sex scenes in it, it had necrophilic yearnings in it, too. Ron and Raleigh with an observation based upon what Jeremy mentioned a few minutes ago. Bob, wrestlers seem to die early, or if they make it out of the ring, they become ministers and become extremely conservative politically. Ew. Oh, there's the story. Miss Elizabeth passes away at 42. Lex Luger arrested. Miss Elizabeth was Elizabeth Hewlett. Lex Luger, real name Larry Fole, called 911 and claimed that Elizabeth was unconscious and having problems breathing. She was immediately rushed to the hospital, accompanied by Luger and paramedics, and brought to Kenistone Hospital in Cobb County, Georgia. She was pronounced dead at the hospital a short time later. She was only 42. Hey. Lex Luger, interviewee of Pat Robertson, was charged with drug possession and distribution, illegal body-enhancing drugs, anabolic steroids, testosterone, Sazien, hydrocodone, Xanax. Wow. So that's what you got to do to get on Pat Robertson's show. And then you say, and Jesus forgave me for all of it. Thanks, Ron. Thanks going out to Glenn. Glenn has taken us a little further toward getting out of the hole here. Thank you very, very kindly. That means that Dr. John's challenge has been met. And we are now at $180 to go to get out of the hole to get the week started. Thanks so much. I'm going to take a moment here just to pay some degree of attention to something that will probably be underreported. It might get a I don't know. Remember that mudslide in Washington State that the for-profit media mostly couldn't be bothered to cover? Well, imagine the scope of this. Now, this is in the Balkans. This is in Bosnia. A place that could ill afford it. But what place can afford it? NBC News reporting more than 1 million people have been caught up in the worst flooding to hit the Balkans in over a century. A crisis that the Bosnian foreign minister likened today to the horrors of the war there in the mid-1990s. Zlatko Lagumdzija said that the damage from the flooding was terrifying, saying the physical destruction is not less than the destruction caused by the war. During the war, many people lost everything. Today, again, they have nothing. 100,000 houses have been ruined, destroyed, rendered useless by the flooding. About 1 million human beings are without access to clean water. Three 3,000 landslides have been occasioned by the flooding. The Balkans are a mountainous region. And in a mountainous region, when rain falls in copious quantities in a short time, bad things can happen in a hurry. I mean, we know it for a fact in central Appalachia because of what happens when you get a heavy rain on top of a mountaintop removal site where there's nothing to catch it and it all just runs away, and the next thing you know, there's a raging river where the little brook used to run in front of your house in the holler. More than 3,000 landslides. And the 3,000 landslides were caused because 3 months' worth of rainfall came down in 3 days' time. And it's not just Bosnia, it's also Serbia and Croatia. And here's a bonus. There's still quite a lot of detritus remaining from that horrible, horrible visit to the abattoir that was the Balkan War of the 1990s. A man named Mladic is presently on trial in The Hague for his participation in war crimes, particularly in Sarajevo and Srebrenica. He's charged with something like 8,000 Muslim deaths. It was during the Balkans War that the phrase really came into common currency, ethnic cleansing. In that case, it meant that people who were Muslim got rounded up and massacred, you know, for being Muslim. But get this. In the course of the Balkan War, lots of landmines were deployed. And as is often the case, when the war is over, everybody forgets to go back and dig up the landmines, because, you know, they're landmines. And we'll just hope no six-year-olds step on them. Oh, there goes one now. Damn, I hate it when that happens. So a lot of the landmines that nobody ever did anything about, or to the extent that something was done about them, it amounted to a sign being placed somewhere nearby saying, warning, whole bunch of landmines here, not sure where they are, you might not want to go swanning across this patch of ground. Well, thanks to the three months of rain that fell in 3 days and the 3,000 landslides that have taken place in the region, whole bunches of landmines and the warning signs about the landmines may have been moved around a little bit. Oops. Half the country, half of Bosnia's electricity comes from the Nikola Tesla power plant, and it is faced with potential catastrophe from flooding. They're trying to keep water back from the plant with sandbags. The union spokeswoman for the operator of the plant, which is called EPS, Gina Trisovic, she said, she told Reuters, the plant should be safe now. We've done all we could. Now it's in the hands of God. I hate official statements like that. So if the plant is not destroyed by the flooding, God came through. But if it does, well, mysterious are his ways. I'm looking at a photograph right now of a town in northern Bosnia called Brisko. I think that's how you would pronounce it. Looks like a pretty flat region, not particularly mountainous, because as far as the eye can see, you got water, floodwaters. Now it's in the hand of God. Would that be the same God that didn't even care enough about the innocents who died on September 11th to greasy spot Dick Cheney? Yeah, that God. Oops. Yeah, big oops. But by the way, the floods in Bosnia and Serbia and Croatia are being referred to as the worst floods since record-keeping on the topic began. And that would be at least 100 years ago. I always thought the Austro-Hungarian Empire was rather, well, I mean, it was fragile and it was sort of attenuated. But they did like to keep records, and apparently 100 years ago or so, they started keeping records of flooding. And nothing like this has happened in the last 100 years. It is 2014. In 1914, nothing like this had happened. God. We're getting near the anniversary of the slaughter of Archduke Franz Ferdinand, and we all know what that occasioned. Apparently, though, if I understand the reading that I've done on this topic, not a lot of flooding in Bosnia or the Balkans. I mean, yeah, every now and then a river is going to get out of its banks, but it's not just every day, apparently, and it's not even every century. And around here, or around home, what we call the kind of stuff that hit Bosnia, we call them 500-year floods or 1,000-year floods, because there's no evidence of them happening in the last either interval. Three months' worth of rain in 3 days. Well, these things just happen. No, they don't. Welcome to climate change. You know, you think about the transpiration cycle of water. When, for instance, Antarctica is nice and frozen over like it's supposed to be, you don't get a lot of transpiration of water vapor into the air. Can you imagine what the rains are going to be like after Western Antarctica gets all done calving away its ice sheets? Because it's easy to look at those climate-derived forecast maps that show Florida underwater, Mobile underwater, Pensacola underwater, New Orleans, Pascagoula, Biloxi underwater, Houston underwater, Port Arthur underwater, Corpus Christi underwater, South Padre Island underwater, San Francisco underwater, San Diego underwater, Seattle underwater, New York, Boston, Baltimore, D.C. You know, this was one of the last places, where I am sitting right now is one of the last places in D.C. that was not underwater, according to the 69, because 69 feet is a very possible likelihood coming out of climate change scenarios. The very place that I'm sitting was not underwater. South lawn of the Capitol, beach party. Up here, no. I don't think I want to be around for... I don't want to be here. I don't want to be here when this is one of the last dry spots left in D.C. Because I don't think the Methodists have the heavy artillery to hold back the drowning hordes. But when the Balkans get floods, the likes, and people write about these things. I mean, there are fascinating stories out there of astronomical things being learned because of the way that painters painted the night sky centuries ago. And it's not like the Balkans were an illiterate place. You got to think if you know, some monk in some monastery, somebody somewhere, would have written down, oh, by the way, it flooded like all F. We're living in a world where we're going to learn the meaning of extreme. This may no longer just be Earth. This may be extreme Earth. Yeah, and I'm not talking about because everybody has a Mountain Dew either. Archipelagos are going to be created out of places that were once dry land. And I'm just wondering, And I mean, I would love to have some input on this because I think about this kind of thing. What is the population movement dynamic going to look like when a place like Boston winds up underwater? Are people just going to stay right where they are and go to rowboats? You know, when Yonkers looks like Venice, what's the population of Manhattan Island or Long Island going to do? Where are they going to go? I mean, are the Boston people just going to leave the wet places and go to high ground? And what happens to the people that are already living on high ground? Okay, so the people who are already living on high ground, they got to go. They got to move. So what happens to the people where they move to? This is like asking what happens when one domino hits the next. Yeah, I know. Our government had a domino fascination in the 60s and 70s. Well, you know, South Vietnam goes, then, well, goddammit, the communists will, well, they'll be in Topeka, Kansas by sunrise. Doesn't work that way. Human mass migrations are scary things. And the thing is, we have some evidence of them. The so-called Aryans, the white folks, who came down out of Central Asia and descended upon the Indian subcontinent. They were cattle drovers. And hence the religious fascination with cattle. Well, you know, here we are in 2014, and we're talking about an event 4,000 years ago? And the dark-skinned people of India still haven't gotten over that mass migration? My Ojibwe friends in northern Wisconsin have an origin myth that talks about the journey away from Turtle Island. Or toward Turtle Island. I think this is all Turtle Island. But it's a distant memory of a mass migration. As I've mentioned before, the ancestors of the Lakota, the Nakota, and the Dakota, at one point in time, lived in what is now modern-day Logan, West Virginia. Why did they pick up and leave? Is that just the natural dynamics of hunter-gatherer culture? Now we know what the impacts of forced migrations look like. You have the Indian Removal Act of the mid 19th century that is remembered to this day as the Trail of Tears. You have the out-migrations and population transferences that accompany the creation of the states of Pakistan and India in the late 1940s. That didn't work out well either. I know I've mentioned this topic before. Maybe I'm just, a conspiracy theorist? Or maybe my brain just works a little bit differently than other people's brains? Oh, Sparky's working the funny side of the street this evening. Europe can sell us water for oil. Somewhere there's a capitalist who's thinking, yeah, it's not a bad idea. It'd probably work. Shit. which is depressing all by itself. Let's take a break. If you want to get involved with the program, there's only one way to do it vocally or verbal, or, you know, spoken word, and that is via Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn being the contact address. Email's fine, bobkincaid@gmail.com. You can reach out via Twitter, @BobKincaid, or on Facebook, Bob Kincaid. Any way you want to have input into the conversation is fine by me. I just wonder if I'm the only one that, because this isn't apocalyptic in the sense of, you know, and the coastal cities drowned, and then Jesus came down and the waters receded and he walked up on the water and everybody said, yay, we're saved. I don't think it plays out like that. But I'd love to have your thinking. Because some of the, okay, I'm weird. I just am. I was outside on the sidewalk in D.C. today, and I just saw this lovely young woman pushing a stroller with a little baby in it. He looked like he was maybe about 2 years old. And all of a sudden in my head, I started doing, you know, math to the best of my capabilities. I thought, okay, maybe you were born 2012. That means you'll be 80 in 2092. What are you going to see? Are you going to be the one? Are you going to wind up playing playing on the beach on the south lawn of the Capitol? Are there in the last 100 years generations of people? Okay, let's call it since the close of the Civil War. Since the close of the Civil War, when we thought we put the issue of secession to bed, we didn't. How many generations have wondered if there would be a United States of America at all for the next generation? Political platitudes and whatnot notwithstanding. How many? Because I think we're there. He was a happy, smiling little baby. And Mama was being real healthy, and she wasn't just pushing that. She wasn't just pushing that stroller. She was running that stroller. I got to figure that was a hell of a cardio workout. And of course, they would just come and give me one of those fancy dinner jackets with the sleeves that tie in the front. If I'd looked at her and said, "Ever wonder what his world's going to be when he's 80 years old?" Because if you get people starting to think about that, stuff gets real, real fast. Oh, well, he's going to be a doctor, and he's going to, you know, he's probably going to work in one of the hospitals around here, and he'll be wildly successful. What if around here is underwater? And I really want to be careful about this line of inquiry because I, for sake, don't want to wind up sounding like Alex Jones, you know, where we've all got to lay in a heady stock of dried foods and vacuum sealed stuff, and everybody's got to have 9 dozen AK-47s, and we dig moats around our houses. Ultimately, that's one of the questions. When this shit comes, are we going to deal with it cooperatively or as rugged individualists? Are we going to deal with it with our evolution evolved propensity for group dynamics and cooperation and community, or are we going to let the right wing have their way and just start gunning everybody down and stealing their stuff because that's capitalism? I don't have an answer. I would like to have that conversation amongst the Horn family commune. Ron and Raleigh noting, I need a little help. Bob, isn't the period in which we live called the antediluvian? So soon we'll be living in the antediluvian period? Inquiring minds need to know. Ante. No, that's ante. Ante is before. No, antediluvian is before the flood. That's Noah and back. Or I'm wrong. Okay, we're going to have some help on this. Take a break. And your thoughts are welcome via Skype. Bob Kincaid Horn is the contact address. We are, thanks to Richard and Sal and Glenn and Mike and Jim and Dr. John, we are $180 away from coming up even with fundraising for the month of May. Thank you very much, one and all. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Your father's spirit still lives in this place. I
Okay, Montreux, Switzerland was as close as I could get to the Balkans as far as music was concerned. My apologies. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. a lot of fun going on in the chat room, and I'm being Sparky is sharing with me selections. Larry noting, flooding in the Balkans, massive fish kill on the Jersey Shore. You have to ask your own self, are you rapture ready? Maybe in the future the old-timers can tell the hipper snappers about having to walk on water many nautical miles to a one-room schoolhouse. No, wait, many leagues. We are all Kevin Costner now, my friend. Oh, God. Yeah, and our buddy Horst checks in. This is an antipodal listening outpost Taiwan reporting. Horn remote unit Alpha coming through loud and clear, although I have yet to figure out precisely what is on the plate for the program thus far. I just told Horst I don't think there was even a plate. It's all morans all the way down. That's the thing about Moran Monday. It can go anywhere. And you know, with all that talk about the Balkans and the flooding and you know, the deniers sit there and go, well, you know, it happens. I mean, you know, it happened to Noah and stuff. Right? Right. Thanks very much. Thanks very much to Tony, who just took us down to $160 to go to come even and get out of the hole and only have to deal with our daily fundraising goals. Thank you very much, Tony. Meanwhile, News Ninja Gene with a quick note. Oh, Bob, look on the bright side. I've heard that according to D.C. real estate agents in D.C., Dems rent and repukes buy. Deny that, morons. News Ninja Gene's new motto is pushing electrons with a dust broom. No, 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 Marty. Rob Nen is not coming on in relief. I'm gonna make this one a complete game. Marty noting Deep Purple's classic "Smoke on the Water" was his intro music when he came in to close out Giants games. No closers here. Uh-uh. So yeah, it really is. It's Moran Monday. Let's go to Ohio. And every time I see one of these stories, I have to tell myself, somewhere out there, there are actually good cops. And I'm fortunate in that here where we are, you know, we're in the jurisdiction of the Capitol Police. And for the most part, they seem like decent folks. Except when they decide to chase some poor psychotic woman to her death. Oops, forgot about that. You know, you talk to them, they talk back. You know, they're kind of like beat cops. See one walking along, how's the dogs today? Dogs are sore. But no, there are good cops. I've known some. But, Lord, doesn't a story like this just work real hard to convince you otherwise? The story's out of Summit County, Ohio. Comes from the Akron Beacon Journal. And it's the story of Sean Householder. It was in domestic relations court. And details are not what we would like the details to be. Maybe some of this stuff was under seal. That may explain it. But she was waiting to have a bench warrant lifted for failure to appear. Now, here's the gnat sound of the event. No, that's an ad. Dadgum, every bit of actuality on a newspaper site now has a booze commercial or a commercial for, well, whatever. Here we go. We have video of a woman sitting in a room. There are no bars, no keys, no locks. Cop walks over to her. He's somewhat out of sight. All you can see is his left leg and his left hand. And all of a sudden, the cop is on the woman. He's grabbing her by the neck. He's shaking her by the neck. He knocks her over out of the chair. He's still got her by... Okay, then he takes her by the back of the hair, raises her up, pulls her head back, and uses his hands to force open her mouth, picks up a pill bottle, and continues to batter this woman, who, ironically enough, was in domestic relations court. Sean Householder. Second cop walks in, stands there, and looks at the ongoing battery taking place. Oh, look, the guy's got his head, grabbing her by the hair some more. Okay, now the second cop gets down between her legs like he wants to rape her. Then they grab her by the neck and the hair some more, drag her arms behind her back and handcuff her. What in the hell has this woman done? Here's the third cop, who mumbles into his shoulder-mounted microphone. Oh, look, it's a fourth cop. Fifth cop. And the woman, finally subdued, is merely laying on the floor in a heap. Sixth cop. These are all sheriff's deputies from Summit County, Ohio. By now, the woman's mouth is bleeding, having had the cop force his hand into her mouth. We're talking.
My name's Lieutenant. I'm a chef.
Yeah, okay. We saw the ad the first time. I'm sorry. I didn't catch the ad coming on there because I was just kind of transfixed. Sean Householder, 35 years old, was told to wait while the failure to appear warrant was being lifted. She wasn't brought in by the police. She got a notice. She went to court. She behaved like a law-abiding citizen. Deputy Eric Vaughn is the cop in question. The woman had a prescription. A real live, no, I mean, this is not like Rush Limbaugh, where she just had a cigar box full of pills that that the maid went out and got for her on the street. You see her taking two pills out of the bottle and taking the pills. Well, there's no audio on the video, but Ms. Householder reports that the cop said, what are you taking? And she said, Tylenol. And he says, spit it out. And I said, I can't. I meant to say I can't spit it out because I had already swallowed the other pills. But I didn't even get to that part out before he just yanked me up and threw me down on the ground and was trying to dig these pills out of my mouth. And there was one pill in there, and I couldn't even get it out because he kept shoving his hand in my mouth and squeezing my face and pulling my hair at the same time. He was pulling down on my bottom lip and squeezing my face at the same time. He basically pulled my lip away from my teeth. She's got bruises on her face. She's got cuts inside her mouth. She's got bruises on her legs and some hair loss because he pulled the hair out of her head. Oh, really?
The cop even picks up the pill bottle and looks at it and sees that it's her prescription for her medication.
She was handcuffed, she was frisked, her bags were searched, and then they finally got around to taking her to Akron General Medical Center. She told the Akron Beacon Journal, "They were acting like I wanted to escape from Alcatraz. It was awful." Meanwhile, of course, the cops have their own version of events, which is not based on reality, but instead is based on life as they wish it was. While taking Ms. Householder into custody, Deputy Vaughn witnessed her attempt to ingest several pills. He restrained her for her safety, and she was transported to a local hospital where she was treated and released. Okay. Because people frequently commit suicide over bench warrants. He restrained her for her safety. In other words, knowing what we know now, he caused lacerations inside her mouth. He bruised her face. He split her lip away from its interior in her mouth. Battered her about her legs and back, and pulled hair out of her head. Beat, 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 for her own personal safety. Because she was trying to OD on the Tylenol. Oh, please, Ms. Householder, get a lawyer. Please get a lawyer. Thank God there are hard-working, dedicated law enforcement professionals out there willing to protect people by beating the shit out of them. Oh, Mr. Orwell. Right? Yeah. Yeah, see, I know how this works. Larry in the chat room asking, "Hey, but Bob, how is she dressed?" Did she have it coming? Was she asking for it? You know, such is the, you know, this happens to law enforcement in a fascist state that is deeply paranoid. I was talking a couple of minutes ago about the about, you know, what we can expect sea level rise to do. Turns out that Governor Skeletor of Florida, the otherwise known as the unindicted co-conspirator, he's a big climate change denier. Rick Scott is. He also denies that poor people need medical care, and denies that people who don't have medical care would like to have medical care instead of dying. Rick Scott just denies a lot of stuff. Deny, deny, deny. Rick Scott has a $9.2 million mansion in Naples, Florida, that's about 200 feet off the ocean. It is all of 1 foot above sea level. There isn't a lot of hope for Rick Scott's mansion when that climate change he denies brings on that sea level rise that he denies. Even though, and this isn't predictive stuff, this is stuff that's happened over the last, there we go with the 100 years again, the sea level has raised about 9 inches. Down in Key West, because they've been measuring. There's been about a 9-inch sea level rise in Key West as measured by a tidal gauge. Not just Skeletor Rick Scott, but all his neighbors too. They're going to have some problems. Sea level rise triples the chance of a storm surge, putting more than 11,000 homes in Naples at risk of flooding by 2030, which is really not that far away. Or maybe you can take the George Bush approach. Who knows? We'll all be dead. So when the Tampa Bay Times asked Rick Scott about sea level rise in Florida, which is pretty much going to make most of Florida cease to exist, Rick Scott responded as follows, because he's a moron, and this is Moron Monday. I'm not a scientist, but I can tell you what. We're going to make sure we continue to make the right investments in the state to take care of our environment. We love living here. How long can you tread water? And see, it doesn't have to be by 2030. This could happen in the next hurricane season. Storm surges. We've heard of those, haven't we? Why, yes, as a matter of fact. You know what? If we just deny it, maybe it won't happen. Most people who say that wind up in some sort of mental health care. Well, or at least they do in civilized countries. You know, when the little voices in your head start talking to you. By the way, a little something-something coming in from News Ninja Gene. Inside Climate News reporting, illegal dumping of Texas fracking waste caught on video. Now remember, this stuff is massively toxic, brutally poison. Under the cover of early morning darkness in South Texas last March, a tanker truck ferrying fluids from an oil and gas drilling site rumbled down a country road, spewing its toxic load all over the place. God, these guys sound like they're almost as moral as the coal industry. The concoction of drilling fluid, which typically includes undisclosed and dangerous chemicals, that helps, oil, metal shavings, and naturally occurring radioactive materials. It's just like getting an x-ray every day, all the time. Coated. Interesting use of the verb. Coated 8 miles of roadway, according to Karnes County Sheriff's Department report obtained by Inside Climate News. The spill has prompted an investigation by the Sheriff's Department, the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality, and the State Railroad Commission, none of whom are going to do a damn thing. If not for surveillance video given to the Sheriff's Department, God, I hope they only gave him a copy. The trucker responsible for the dumping may have disappeared into the night, but the video caught the distinctive flash from the reflective stripes on the tanker. It was the telltale clue detectives needed. For what? Who's going to get charged, please? Because this is about American energy security. And then all the answers you could ever possibly want are right here. Although sheriff's investigators couldn't determine whether the illegal dumping was intentional, yeah, it may have been accidental. You know, when it's accidental, it gets a little less poisonous. You know? Yeah. It highlights the growing problem of how to dispose of billions of gallons of contaminated fluids left over from both the drilling and production phases of oil and gas development using hydraulic fracturing or fracking. Bless their hearts. Inside Climate News is trying so hard to be real journalists on this and be objective and stuff. The waste fluid is disposed of wherever it is convenient and out of sight in Texas, said Sharon Wilson, an organizer with the Earthworks Oil and Gas Accountability Project in Texas. There is so much of this that they don't know what to do with it, she said. So it's not surprising that there are cases where it's just dumped anywhere. Damn tree huggers. Sheriff's investigators have narrowed the possible offenders to two trucking companies. We weren't there. We didn't do it. And even if we were, and even if we did, we were only following orders. One trucking company provided GPS data to investigators proving its tankers did not drive the contaminated route, according to the sheriff's report. This is known as keeping a second GPS tracker. That left the second company, On Point Services, as the focus of the investigation. When the On Point Services tanker left the Marathon drilling site, it contained 20 to 30 barrels, that's 840 to 1,260 gallons, of contaminated drilling fluid. On the other hand, when it got to the facility where tankers are supposed to be cleaned out, it was miraculously empty. Praise the Lord, he's done it again. Meanwhile, On Point Services owner Winfred Stanfield says, we didn't do it. If you'd have asked us first, we'd have given you the dummied up GPS unit to show it weren't us. But you asked them first, and they give you the dummied up unit. Well, that ain't hardly fair, is it? Is that the way it's supposed to be in America? Where an innocent, hard-working fracking operation can't dummy up and bullshit up the evidence so as to keep folks from realizing that we're poisoning them just to make a damn dollar? I mean, really, is that the America our forefathers fought and died for? Stanfield went on to say, I don't want to touch this story at all. Hey, bring me a bourbon. And when confronted by sheriff's investigators with evidence, the video, the driver's admission, and documents showing the On Point Services truck drove the route at the time it was contaminated, Stanfield blamed the driver, according to the report. You know, you can't get good help. I mean, we pay good money here at On Point Services. I mean, and by good money, I mean we sometimes actually pay them. But, you know, you sit there and you tell them, you know, don't be spilling this stuff all over the road for 8 miles. You know, it's pretty deadly poisonous. Don't be doing that. And we wink at them real good just to make sure they understand. But still, they go and they do it. You can't get, well, obviously that driver was not competent. So the detective in charge said he disagreed with Winfred Stanfield, and he said he thought the driver was competent. But then, because he's a detective, and because detectives operate like this unless they're investigating, some black kid who may have had some rock cocaine or some poor white dude who it might have been trafficking in a little bit of meth, but this is Winfred Stanfield III or what the hell ever, and you got to be detective and real extra careful good with them. So naturally, the detective told Stanfield, well, I can't prove the driver intentionally spilled the liquid on the highway. Karnes County Chief Deputy Robert E. Brom, Jr. said, if I could, I would file criminal charges on him. But I can't. Texas Council of Environmental Quality says they haven't finished their investigation. You can look for that report sometime in the 23rd century. The Railroad Commission is still reviewing the incident to determine whether enforcement action is warranted. Meanwhile, this is not, according to the Inside Climate News report, this is not the first occasion. Of course it's not. Over in Wilson County, Amber Lissy is an organic farmer, she and her husband, and they found a truck stopped smack dab in the middle of the dirt road that's near her home outside of Poth, or Poth, P-O-T-H, Texas, you pick, this past January. And she saw a brownish-colored fluid with a strong diesel odor. In an interview, she said it was gushing out and pooling on the road. And so she turned around straight away and ran home and dropped her children off and told her husband and her dinner guests what was going on. And she then took a friend out to document it, but the tanker was gone. So she scooped up a sample of the fluid in a canning jar and alerted law enforcement. And law enforcement and county officials did what they were supposed to do because, you know, money, and just said it weren't nothing. Yeah. And remember, we've had stories out of Pennsylvania of the same thing happening there. That's the nice thing about fracking in West Virginia. If you need to dump some fracking fluid somewhere, we've got more than 100 multi-billion gallon seas of poisonous toxic waste. And what's a tanker truck full or two? Right? Yeah. Oh, it goes on and on and on. But here's one I ran across that was kind of, I thought, sort of interesting from a capitalism standpoint. And this is where you know that people are serious about climate change. There are people who are serious about it. And some of the people who are most serious about climate change are the ones who are going to have their money get hurt. Now, a letter about climate change being a national security threat was released just this past week by a group of something like 9 retired military generals and admirals who said, pay attention, listen up, this is real, and it's going to mean a real mess for the United States if we can keep it together. Well, now this. Because Nationwide is not on your side, and Snake Farm is not a good neighbor. Dum-da-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum, Farmers Insurance Company. Last month, filed 9 class action lawsuits. And they were filed in the Chicago area. And the 9 class action lawsuits they filed were against... were against local governments because I guess Farmers has paid out flood damages on coverage in the area. And in these 9 class action lawsuits, Farmers Insurance Company says that these local governments in Chicago knew or should have known that climate change is real, 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 and that climate change inexorably leads to higher and heavier rainfall amounts. But the lawsuit claims that the local governments have done little to nothing to alleviate or mitigate the effects of the heavier, harder rainfall. In particular, citing sewers and stormwater drains. The insurance company is trying to get money out of the hides of local communities for the monies that it contractually paid out on claims that it had to pay. But insurance companies have entire phalanxes. I'm sorry, there's no such word as phalanxes. Come on, Bob. Phalanges. Of lawyers who sit around drinking beer after work and, you know, look at one another and say, hey, wait a minute. What if we sue the communities for... in a class action for not doing enough about climate change? And that way we'll take public monies to fill the company coffers for the monies that we paid out even though we had a contractual obligation to pay them. And we're going to get a sumbitch year-end bonus for this. Zam, we're smart. Meanwhile, Andrew Logan, who is an insurance expert, said to E&E News that what's going on here is that Farmers Insurance, quote, could be positioning itself to avoid future losses nationwide from claims linked to floods, sea level rise, and even lawsuits against its corporate policyholders that emit greenhouse gases. And this is the tip of the iceberg. Sorry, no pun intended. There's going to be a bunch of these. See, there's this principle in the law called reasonability and foreseeability. If something is reasonably foreseeable, you're on the hook for it if it happens and you don't try to make sure it doesn't, or it doesn't happen and you should have tried to make it happen. And at this point in time, the devastating effects of climate change are, in fact, reasonably foreseeable. Because it's science. That story I told you earlier about the woman who lost it and said she figured if Batman could fly, she could too. That's not reasonable and foreseeable in a general circumstance. Lots of floods because the climate is changing and the planet is heating up are. Michael Gerard, who worries about climate change law at Columbia Law School in New York, said, no one is expected to plan for the 500-year storm, but if horrible events are happening with increasing frequency, that may shift the duties. Because, you see, lawyers see human beings not as human beings, but as bundles of rights and duties. This, however, is a fascinating quote. It comes from the New York Times, where you really don't want to be a female and in an executive position. New. Most insurers, this New York Times story says, most insurers, including the reinsurance companies that bear much of the ultimate risk in the industry, have little time for the arguments heard in some right-wing circles that climate change isn't happening and are quite comfortable with the scientific consensus that burning fossil fuels is the main culprit of global warming. That's because, as evil as insurance companies are, they're kind of fact-based. Mortality tables, actuality tables, statistical probabilities. This is the stock in trade of an insurance company. It's a gamble. You take out life insurance, you're betting that you'll live longer, or you're betting that you'll pay money and live longer. And the insurance company is betting that, anyway, it's a gamble. You know how I was asking about the little two-year-old that I saw in the stroller? According to FEMA, by the time that two-year-old is 80, coastal flood hazard areas in the United States will have increased by something on the order of 55%. And so the only people out there who are screaming, it's a hoax, it's a hoax, it's a hoax, are the people who stand to profit by screaming it. You'll notice that the insurance industry, and this tells you something, a lot of people will bow in fealty to the coal, oil, and gas industries, the hydrocarbon industries. The entirety of the Republican Party, for instance, does. The fundamentalist right-wing religion industry does. The multi-million, maybe billion-dollar right-wing think tank industry, most of which is centered here in Washington, D.C., does. This is the power of capital. Because guess who's probably got more money than the coal, oil, and gas industries combined? Maybe even than the banks. The insurance industry. And the insurance industry is sitting there saying, I'll be damned if I'm going to let a bunch of starry-eyed, greed-driven monsters take away all of the money that us greed-driven monsters have accumulated. This really is sort of a Clash of the Titans kind of capital thing. And so the insurance industry is acting. But the question arises, if they're willing to sue communities, when are they going to sue their insureds in, say, the oil industry, the gas industry, the coal industry? How do you sue a community in a county? How do you sue Kearns County, Texas, for not doing enough to make sure that the amoral pissants of the fracking industry don't dump radioactive, highly toxic fracking fluid along 8 miles of a stretch of your road? How do you sue the county? What happens when people start making claims based on this? It's a question that I ask myself all the time. What happens when the first viable lawsuit against a coal company for killing somebody with the outfall of their mountaintop removal operations? What happens when that first jury verdict that all, you know, that's the neat thing about juries. You don't have to teach them a lot. Defense lawyers will try to confuse them with, you know, there's this number, but there's this number. But at the end of the day, if you can teach, because they're real easy, if you can teach a jury to make one straight line down, that's the number one. And then you just have to convince them to start drawing circles after it. What happens? What happens the first time one of those verdicts that's got one straight line and a whole bunch of circles, maybe seven, maybe eight, maybe nine circles after it, comes in a courtroom in West Virginia? What happens? Then, I'll tell you what happens. It gets interesting. The judicial system of West Virginia will do everything in its power to try to prevent that from happening, but there is no guarantee. So, you know, I just wanted to, I don't know, I'm fascinated by the fact that the insurance industry not only is not, but cannot run away from climate change. Makes you want to ask the Ted Cruz's and the Rand Paul's and the rest of the Marco Gubbio. Hey, buddy, you taking any money from the insurance industry? You think they're okay with you saying there's no such thing as climate change? Because they believe in it, you dumbass. So I guess we've come to a stopping place. Thanks very much to everyone who has gotten us a long way out of the hole this evening. Thanks to Glenn and Tony and I mispronounced the name and I feel bad. Reinhard, not Richard, Reinhard. Thank you to Reinhard and Sal and Mike and Jim and Dr. John. It's very important that we just be able to keep paying the bills. And thanks to all of you, we're down to only $160 to go to come even, which means that if we're still there tomorrow evening, it'll be $310. But that beats the hell out of $450. So thank you very much. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to our chat room moderators, Lottie and Sparky, Texas Betsy, and thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Cheer up, Bob, says Gene. Thank you. Thank you to John Fox, who is working on an impending album release. You'll hear about it here first, or very nearly first, when that comes off. Thanks for all that John Fox does for us here. Advising me on, just keeping me sane where the equipment is concerned, and making changes to the website that make it much more interactive and much more pleasant to visit. Thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. You know, since 2002, Ben Birch has almost single-handedly saved the very idea of progressive radio, and he's done it via the good offices of the White Rose Society. And he's never sent a bill. There would be no horn without Ben Birch. Thanks, of course, to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net and acheact.org, acheact.org. Remember, that's why we're here in D.C., is working on the AIC Act. We need you wherever you are, whomever your senators are. We need you to reach out to your senators and tell them you want a companion bill to H.R. 526, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, to be introduced in the Senate of the United States. It won't take you a lot of time, I promise. But whatever time it takes will be some of the best time you have ever spent in your life. Indeed. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Here comes Rick Smith on the horn.